reached the final level. The Spicy McNugget side mission. Maximum flavour, crispy crunch, and a spicy dip with a kick.
Are you ready?
Spicy McNuggets, for a limited time only. Until the 9th of September 25. Fees apply to delivery. Participation and price may vary. Subject to availability. Serving times apply.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Welcome to Peak to Pit. I'm Allie Peak here with TJ Pittinger. And now that college football is over, we're looking for other things to talk about. How was your week, TJ? Should we talk about that?
Yeah, it was good. So not too crazy of a week. We did go down to, we agreed the other day, we went down to Anna Maria Island and hung out with some friends that are in town from Indiana. They have a four-year-old and a little girl that is just a couple months older than Elena, and so it was really cool to watch them interact. Elena loved the water, the sand. She loved playing in the pool. So the week was good. The weekend was better, and today was back to reality. So how was your week? How was your weekend? I saw you went and visited the mouse over there. How have you been?
I was good. We went to Animal Kingdom. It was one of my sister's birthdays, and her son told her that he wanted to take her to Animal Kingdom to celebrate, which, you know, every adult wants their child to tell them that they're taking them to Disney for their birthday. But it actually was really fun, and the weather was nice, and so that's good. The babies were perfect, which, you know, I'm sure you can relate. The idea of taking infants anywhere, let alone an amusement park with, you know, thousands of your closest friends is really intimidating, but they basically just slept the whole way. So it was perfect.
Awesome. Well, you said to open up, we were going to try and talk about something other than college football since that's over. We're about to fail at that.
Totally.
So a little bit of a different show tonight. We're going to first guest we've had on, we're going to have your cousin, Bo Peak on. Bo is graduating from Stanford in a couple of months. And is transferring back to USF as a grad transfer after that. So we just wanted to get him on and talk about transferring, the transfer portal, interacting with coaches, kind of a second recruitment, all of that. And so we can't escape the college football even in the offseason. So I appreciate you setting this up, and I'm looking forward to chatting with Bo. So you want to go ahead and get him on?
Let's do it. We're joined now by Bo Peak. Bo is, if you are paying attention to the last name, my cousin. He is also a standout. He played for Stanford for the last three seasons. He transferred to USF. He played for Plant High School in Tampa, though, and Berkeley Prep before that. And we are really excited to have him on. Bo, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me.
We're excited. So, you know, when I talked to TJ about my cousin that played for Stanford, one of the things that came up was, how does a Tampa boy end up at Stanford? So what kind of was the recruiting process in high school, and how did you make the decision to head to California?
Well, early on in the recruiting process, I was pretty naive. So basically the process for that was my head coach at Berkeley Prep, Dominic Sio, kind of just told me my freshman year that he saw a lot of potential in me and to go home and do some research. on schools that I would really be interested in. And, you know, with my athletic and academic background from both sides of my family, you know, that's kind of the pairing I was looking for, is, you know, the best spot that I could land, you know, athletically and academically. And so I, you know, my freshman year of high school, I found Stanford and went back and reported to them, you know, among other schools. And I told them, you know, that's the spot I want to be at. Obviously I hadn't had much experience with recruiting or didn't know who was going to actually be interested in me at that point. Cause it was just the beginning of my career. So that's kind of, you know, where my interest started. You know, I guess my coach had a good contact at Stanford at the time, Mike Bloomgren, who recruited Florida. And so he got us in contact early on. But they Stanford's a little different with recruiting. They're, I guess, stingy, for lack of a better word, with offers. They're not like most other schools where they'll just throw them out like candy. And there's, you know, different requirements than most schools. So I had to, you know, make sure I was academically doing what I needed to do. But, I knew as soon as they offered me that I couldn't pass up an opportunity to go to a school like Stanford, get a degree from there. And I knew that, obviously, I didn't want to stay in Florida. I was curious about life outside of the state. And so I didn't really have my eyes set on any schools in Florida. I was kind of looking elsewhere, you know. So that's kind of just how everything unfolded. And, you know, I ended up getting the offer and committed not long after that.
Were there other schools, like, you know, how did it, were you, was it like Stanford or nobody, or were you close to other schools, or like who finished second, third, fourth, or, you know, or was it just Stanford the whole way?
Schools along the same line. I was interested in Duke and Vanderbilt and Northwestern. I guess schools that were kind of along the same criteria for, you know, academic prestige as well as, you know, having a great football program. I didn't really get too involved with any other schools. I had, you know, a bunch of offers, but it wasn't really one of those things where I was too interested in kind of, you know, fishing for opportunities. I just kind of wanted to focus on the schools that were realistic for me. And so those are the schools that, you know, I kept the most contact with.
So it wasn't one of those things where it was down to the wire. You weren't sure what you were going to do. You had to flip a coin. You kind of knew, you know, for a long time going into signing day where it was that you wanted to be.
Yeah, 100%. The only thing that made it a little different is, you know, before you can sign, you have to find out if you actually get into the school. And they had a bunch of different requirements. Taking at least two APs in your senior year, all A's and B's throughout high school. And I don't know if they made any exceptions, you know, for earlier, your freshman, sophomore year, if you didn't do as well. But I know your junior and senior year were the most important years. So that was the, you know, the only thing that made me a little hesitant, is because I didn't know approaching signing day if I was going to get in or not. And so that's when I, you know, started talking to other schools more heavily. So in a sense, it did come down to the wire, because I didn't find out I got in until a week before signing day, you know, which was a little dangerous, because at that point, you know, a lot of spots are being taken, you know, there's kids committed all over. So the opportunities I had early on in recruiting weren't there at the end. So it was, in a sense, it was down to the wire. So I'm thankful I got in.
So I knew that Stanford had different academic requirements for their athletes. I didn't realize that they were that stringent. It's interesting that Stanford is able to compete on the national stage like they do, given the fact that they're walking around with totally different requirements than most other places.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a lot harder. I know a lot of guys in my class. There was three or four kids that wanted to go to Stanford and that would have gone had they got in, but they just didn't. And so I think that's kind of, you know, I would say for the environment they try to build, you know, I think it's necessary. We ended up, you know, the guys here that we had on the team were a great group of guys, you know. Not guys that you have to worry about, you know, slipping up or making bad decisions. So I guess that takes a lot of worry from the coaches. And you're able to focus a lot more on just the football aspect and developing players and stuff like that, rather than, you know, babysitting or anything like that.
I was going to say, they probably have to employ half as many members of support staff as other schools, because they don't need the babysitters.
Definitely, definitely. And I would say, once you're at Stanford, another difficult thing, which is humbling, is, you know, you're as a, you know, high school kid, you're expecting, you know, not necessarily special treatment, but, you know, like, the college football players are seen in a different light, and you kind of have this idea about what you're walking into going into college. And it was just not the case at Stanford, which is what's so great about this school, is, you know, you're treated as just another regular student, you know, not any special privileges, or you're not, you know, put at the front of the list for tutors or anything like that. You have to go through the same, you know, hoops and hurdles that every other student would go through for getting tutors and, you know, help with anything like that.
Interesting. So, that is definitely different.
What was the, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're good.
So I assume if you played at Plant, Berkeley and all this, like, you know, from the Tampa area, like, I'm born and raised here in Tampa, flatland, beaches all around us, you know, Disney, just all this Tampa stuff. What's it like to go to, the North, not even like Southern California? Like, what was the biggest adjustment for you, you know, being surrounded by mountains? You know, I know the water was right there, but it's definitely different for a lot of the year. What's been the hardest adjustment, you know, being out there?
The environment's definitely a lot different than Florida. I'm not a big fan of some of the winding roads if you're driving up in the mountains. The driving in Palo Alto is not too bad, but you're kind of secluded in the part of Northern California that I'm at. You got to drive a little bit to really get anywhere outside of Silicon Valley. And so we used to joke when I was in high school that we were stuck in the Berkeley bubble when I was going to Berkeley. And it's kind of the same thing here at Stanford. You're kind of stuck in the Stanford bubble when you're out here. But that being said, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do out here that, you know, as long as you're willing to drive, that you can't do in Tampa. You know, driving to see the Muir Woods, the big redwood trees, and going to Yosemite, and there's a bunch of different beaches, but they're definitely a different layout than Tampa and the rest of Florida. You know, big old cliffs, and the water's freezing and all that stuff. So if you're a nature person, it's awesome, because there's a bunch of different options for you here to explore. It was different, but a welcomed difference.
Are you a big In-N-Out fan or not? I know that's totally irrelevant, but do you like In-N-Out?
Well, honestly, I'm a big Five Guys person. So, you know, I know that there's some diehard In-N-Out fans out here that are from California, but if you're not from California, I guarantee you In-N-Out's not one of your favorites. That's not to say it's not good. You know, you can get a good animal style burger and it'll satisfy, but I prefer Five Guys and Steak and Shake, believe it or not. I love Steak and Shake. So
I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's a little bit of the fact that we don't have In-N-Out here. So like, we hype it up in our minds, but like, now you have access to it 100%. All the time. And so, you know, I can get five Guys any day of the week. So if I'm out there, and the last few times I've been out there, you know, like, I geek out over it, but yeah, if I lived there, I'd probably be the same way. Just give me the Five Guys greasy burger and let's go.
Absolutely. And the fries are a little disappointing at In-N-Out, even if you do get them animal style with the cheese and stuff. A little disappointing. And that's coming from a lineman, so I guess you can say I know what I'm talking about.
Definitely know what you're talking about.
So, transitioning back to football, because I'm really good at taking stuff off topic like that. Just kind of looking through the last couple years of I'm not super familiar with, you know, Stanford season and stuff, but I see that in 17 you guys were 9-3 and then lost a couple of really close games to finish the year in the championship and the bowl game. You know, not as good of a seasons after that, actually 9-4 the next year, but like, what was the highlight of your time there playing at Stanford? Or if there's a couple moments, that's fine. But like, what would you classify as like the peak of that, pun intended?
Yeah. You know, since I redshirted my freshman year and then I had season ending surgery before my junior and senior seasons, I didn't really have any game experience to really draw off of for my favorite moments. It was a great experience, you know, going to the different bowl games. You know, my freshman year, we went to the Sun Bowl in El Paso, and it was actually on my birthday. And so that was a cool experience winning that game, you know, my first year playing college ball, you know, even though I wasn't a part of it, you know, on the field, you know, through practice and, you know, giving our guys looks and scout and stuff like that. That was a good experience. But I would definitely say, you know, my favorite part about being here at Stanford was the group of guys that I got to play with, you know, especially in my class, the class of 16. I don't know. There was just, it was a very family oriented program as far as with the players and our relationships. You know, college football, it's kind of different with the coaches. You're not really with your head coach all that often. You're only with him during the year, during practice. You're with your strength coaches a lot. That's the majority of the staff you're with. And then obviously during meetings and practice, you're with your position coach. And you know, the position coach that recruited me, Randy Hart, ended up leaving right before I came in after, you know, our signing class was done. And so they hired Deron Reynolds, who was with the program a few years prior, and then he went and coached at Oklahoma. But he came back my freshman year, and he was, you know, a phenomenal mentor, real father figure. So I lucked out with him coming in to be my position coach. But the thing that kind of kept the train running was the players, you know, how much we relied on each other. Because, you know, there's a lot of factors to going to school at Stanford, being a student athlete here. You know, most of us are across the country from our families. You know, academically, it's very difficult, to say the least. And so all of that on top of being a Division I athlete, you know, you got to rely on the guys closest to you that are doing the same thing as you on a day-in, day-out basis. So, you know, I got lucky with the group of guys I came in with and the older guys that, you know, were kind of there to show us the way. So I definitely will remember those relationships the most out of my experience here.
This had to be, I don't want to say, I mean, I guess difficult is the right word. Our family is so incredibly close. Obviously, your individual family, your parents and your siblings, but also our extended family, too. And honestly, we're all here. You know, everybody is in Florida. The furthest anybody's away is Jacksonville. And then you went to California. Would you say that's the hardest part about being at Stanford was the fact that everybody else was here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially because, you know, I don't want to speak for all of California because I really didn't experience anything but Northern California. But, you know, I was really missing that Southern hospitality and, you know, the real sense of community you get living in Tampa, at least for me, you know, even if you don't know somebody, you're going to get a smile here and there, you know, going somewhere, people are willing to hold the door. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. It's just, there's little things that, you know, just aren't a part of the culture out here that just make it feel like a weird environment for someone, you know, like me from Florida, you know, from the South. And so, you know, not having my family, was definitely, you know, a difficult part of being so far away. And definitely the same type of atmosphere on Stanford's campus is because it's such a competitive place academically. Like, you almost get the sense that, like, people are trying to compete with you, like, on a daily basis on, you know, the littlest of things. And there's not, I don't know how to explain it. It's just like the whole vibe, as you could say, was just,
it's not that warm and fuzzy.
Not that warm and fuzzy for sure. And I know that's, you know, an aspect of the real world, but for someone who grew up in Florida where that's, you know, a given, you know, anywhere you go, people are just, you know, good people. It was just definitely something I had to get used to.
I was going to ask you next, and this may kind of factor into that, but talk about your decision to, I believe you went into this new transfer portal, correct, to be able to transfer over. Talk about that decision. I've actually got a couple of questions around that, so I'll ask a few, and if you need me to kind of repeat them, I will. But, like, Your decision to go into the portal to you know, was it more about trying to get home? You know, why USF? Were the coaches there at Stanford pretty supportive of that? Did they try and like convince you to stay? You know, like how does like that whole process go down?
Yeah, so I guess first of all, it's definitely different for grad transfers versus, you know, kids who haven't gotten their undergrad or won't be getting their undergrad before they transfer.
Mm-hmm. And you graduated in May, right?
Yes, correct. I graduated this spring. And so I guess, like, since the transfer portal became a thing, grad transfers are, you know, they naturally became a part of that. And so, you know, as far as, like, the response I got from the staff, everyone was supportive, you know, since I was a fifth year guy. And part of what factored in is if I would have stayed at Stanford, you know, I would have only been able to have one more year of eligibility versus since I don't know the specific rule for your timeline out of school. But since I redshirted and I get a medical redshirt from one of my surgery years, then I know I could play 2 years somewhere else. And I thought that would be most beneficial for me because I would have, you know, an opportunity to earn a master's and get that paid for. And I wanted two seasons, you know, since I've, you know, not been able to show what I can do and play for myself. So I know I wanted both seasons to be able to play. And so when I went into the portal, you know, I wasn't thinking necessarily about going back home. I was kind of thinking about what would be, you know, the best situation for me to get the opportunity to play right away. And then as a, you know, benefit, also get a good master's out of it. And so, you know, I, again, didn't really have coming back home in mind initially. But once I started, you know, getting interest from other schools and, you know, other people started hitting me up, I really started to weigh a couple of different factors into my decision. And I think I'm definitely in a different situation than most guys out there. I met a girl out here and I have a son who's going to be 2 in March. And so part of my decision when I really sat and thought about it is, you know, what I wanted to be doing as far as my family. And her and I are co-parenting. We're not together, but she's communicated to me that, you know, she's on the same page with wanting to raise our son in the same place, same city. And so, you know, I thought, you know, coming back home, not only would I be back around my family, you know, playing in Raymond James, a stadium I grew up going to games at, playing for USF, which, you know, I have a lot of familial ties there. My grandfather was the dean of college of business. You know, a few of my cousins go there now. My best friend's on the team right now. And so there was a lot of factors that made it attractive to me. But the main thing was just doing what's best for me and my family. And that was, you know, to be back home around my family and get my son to Florida and you know, kind of a fresh start, but in a familiar place.
Yeah. And if the Wilbers over here keep popping out twins, like they'll take over half of Raymond James soon. So you'll at least have a good cheering
exactly.
section.
They might have to name a section after us.
Yeah, well, for sure.
I haven't told you this yet, Bo, but I tweeted something about like how the attendance was going to increased significantly now that you were coming back. And then I got an email from the ticket, I guess, I don't know, somebody that sells tickets for USF asking if I was interested in season tickets because they saw my tweets. And I thought that was hilarious. But, and Eric and I are looking into season tickets because that would just be such a fun thing to do every Saturday. But I mean, it is, was definitely an emotional and hard decision for you, as it is for, you know, anybody that enters the transfer portal. But what's kind of the process once you do that? Who do you alert? Like, how do you decide you're going into the portal, and then how do you make it happen?
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty simple process. There's a couple requirements, and I know the main one is that before you enter the portal, you have to notify, you know, the coaching staff. And I don't know if that's what the particular reason is for that, if it's, you know, out of respect or what the deal is there. But I know you have to let the coaching staff know. And then you just reach out to compliance. And there was a woman in our compliance office who just kind of helped me get in the portal. I didn't really have to do anything. I just had to send her an email and let her know that I, you know, spoken with the coaches and that she had my permission to enter me in the portal. And so then once you're in, you're in. And then, you know, once you're in, coaches can start contacting you. They have your contact information on the portal. And then they can also reach out to your coaches once you're in the portal and speak to them on, you know, what they think, what your coaching staff thinks of you as a player and a person, and they can do their research. And then you also obviously have the ability to reach out to coaches on your own, which is how I actually got the opportunity to play at USF, is because they were not one of the schools that reached out to me originally. But, you know, I knew that once I had really done my thinking that that was where I wanted to be. And so I hit up my teammate who played for them, my former teammate who plays for them right now, Jacob Mathis. He's a tight end. And, you know, he's my best friend, might as well be my third brother. And so I asked him for Coach Scott's phone number, and I told him, I was like, you know, I'm just going to reach out to him myself and see if the interest is there. And so I called him and left a message and kind of just gave him the rundown of what I wanted to do, who I was, and, you know, I was a Tampa guy, and I was ready to come back home. And the next day, the defensive coordinator, Coach Spencer, contacted me and said that they were pumped. I had interest. They didn't know I was in the portal, and that, you know, they wanted me. And so we made it happen.
That's insane that you just said that name. And you'll have to tell them that we just chatted. So I coached Jacob at Carrollwood Day School before he went to Berkeley Prep.
Shut the front door.
Yeah, he was, I want to say he was either a seventh or eighth grader playing on varsity. I think he was in the eighth grade.
Yep.
Playing on varsity. And I mean, obviously he's amazing. He's a D1, you know, athlete right now, but like, we drew up like lob plays to him. I mean, like we were throwing him alley-oop plays and stuff as an eighth grader on varsity. He was, you know, obviously good enough to play, you know, tight end for USF, but like as an eighth grader, this kid was, you know, I mean, just, you know, he didn't have the, I mean, this isn't a shot or anything, but like, he didn't have the composure of like the seniors and guys that have been playing for years, but like, he was also in eighth grade, you know, playing on varsity. It was so yeah, it's crazy that you just said that, but you have to tell him that Coach TJ said, what's up or something.
That's like that. Hilarious.
I find him and message him.
Absolutely. Yeah. I used to get a kick out of it when we were going to school at Berkeley together. You know, cause that's when our friendship started, you know, end of eighth grade, you know, summer workouts going into high school. And, we used to joke because I'm not built for the basketball court. So I used to live vicariously through him and, you know, his play on the court. And, you know, I just used to love watching him do his thing.
Oh man.
And so, he did it all 4 years.
So talented. Like I said, even as a kid, his brother was like in sixth grade and like, you know, so good as like a sixth grader, you know, like playing on JV as a sixth grader, you know, just insane. So
yeah, Zach won his third national championship at North Dakota State. He's playing football there right now.
That's so nuts. That's so, I mean, such a small world, but so cool.
Absolutely.
So going back to like the portal and everything. So there's so much like mystery around the portal. Like I think fans are just like enamored with it because it's like this new shiny thing that we're all, you know, every time an offensive line, I mean, I'm a Florida State guy. So every time like an offensive line guy goes in the portal, like we're all just like, you know, tagging the coaches and like, we need this, you know, this and that. Miami fans are kind of like the same way. With
I was
going to
say Florida fans are the same way with offensive linemen.
So it's like, absolutely, you know, it's cool to know, like, I didn't know that when you go in there, like it gives you the opportunity to reach out to coaches like that. That was going to be one of the things that I was going to ask, like you can reach out to coaches. They can reach out to you kind of both ways. Is it like Tinder? Like, do you swipe right on the coach or like, how does this work? You know?
Well, to be honest, like you really, like, I didn't really, like, the portal is such like an ambiguous term. Like, I don't know if there's like an actual place for the portal. So like, there's not like,
so I don't know if there's a website
where, like, I can, Yeah, I don't know if there's like a tangible spot where I could go through and like search through coaches' numbers and emails and stuff like that. So I'm not too knowledgeable about that. But I do know that once you're in the portal, you know, you kind of, your information is sent out, you know, all over to coaches and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm not exactly sure the specifics of it either. But I don't know if this was a part of your original question. One thing I did want to include in talking about the portal is like, once you're in it, you can pull out of the portal. Like if you contact your coaches that you want to go into the portal and just see if there's other better opportunities for you out there. And this was something that Coach Shaw communicated to us, especially the fifth year guys, is that, you know, go into the portal, you know, see what opportunities you have. If there's not something that fits better than being here, then we'll welcome you back. And so it wasn't like the end all be all, like once you're in the portal, like that's it, you got to find another place to be. And I don't know how, I guess that's a case by case basis with coaches and programs. But I know that was very comforting to a lot of guys here, because they were able to go and search for what would be best for them. And you know, if they couldn't find anything, they would still, you know, have the opportunity to stay in the familiar place, be at Stanford.
That's so wild. Yeah,
you can leave and enter the portal as many times as you want, I'm pretty sure. There's no limit on that. But when you're out of the portal, you cannot contact coaches. And so I know that there's some guys that are in the portal right now, and they're going to stay in the portal throughout spring ball, and they're going to compete and try to earn their spot here. And, you know, if that's not how it's going to look and there's going to be honest conversations about it, you know, then they're going to pursue opportunities. Or, you know, same type of situation. They're not in the portal. They go through spring ball. They, you know, they're not going to be the guy. And you pretty much know that when you're in spring ball. Obviously, there's opportunities to compete in camp. But then there's guys, you know, that will go into the portal after spring ball. And I think that's mostly for fifth-year guys.
So,
yeah. I just think it's so crazy. That, like, doesn't that seem like something that could very easily be abused? I mean, it has to be more of a case-by-case basis, because otherwise, what's to keep kids from entering the portal every single off season just to see what's out there?
Well, yeah, I think it's definitely a case by case basis, and it really depends on the program and coach. Like I know I was reading an interview where our new head coach, Coach Scott, was talking about, you know, buying in and what he expects out of our team this off season. And if, you know, if you're not on board with that, then he'll help you get in the portal, but that's a one-way door. And so I think it really depends on the coach and the program. And, you know, if, you know, that's a risk that, you know, each student athlete is going to have to be willing to take, and they're going to have those conversations with their coaches, because it's definitely a case-by-case situation and a coach situation. And so I was fortunate, you know, being at Stanford and along with the other guys that I've played with or play with that are in the portal or thinking about being in the portal.
David Shaw is one of the, you know, better respected coaches in the country, been at Stanford forever. You know, I can remember being a huge David Shaw fan in 2013. They played as an underdog on a Thursday night against Oregon. At that point, Oregon was ranked higher than Florida State. They beat them, and I think that gave us the number two ranking in the country. So talk a little about David Shaw. I mean, you talked about how he's been helpful, you know, kind of has that open door for you if you needed to come back. Just what was it like playing under him? You know, what was that experience? You know, a guy that I think is super well respected all around college football.
Yeah, he's obviously well respected for a reason. Just looking at, you know, his knowledge of the game, you know, he's, you know, one of the smartest coaches that you're going to find. But as far as like his player relationship, you know, to be honest, like you're going to have a handful of conversations with Coach Shaw, personally, not too much interaction with him. throughout your career here, unless you're, you know, one of the Christian McCaffreys or one of the quarterbacks and stuff like that. And part of that is, you know, you're not spending that much time with your head coach. And so I wouldn't necessarily say he's a player's coach in the terms that, like, he'll sit down and you'll have, like, a friendship with him. With that, like, where, you know, but he's also the type of guy where you can walk into his office and if you need to sit down and have a conversation with him, or you need guidance, or you just need an honest opinion, he's gonna be straightforward with you. But one thing that I've always respected about my time playing under him is he has, you know, the player's best interest. And so, like, especially with this portal deal, you know, his message to the fifth year guys, because I don't think we had any undergrads enter the transfer portal, you know, and part of that's because no one wants to lose, you know, you come to Stanford, you know, to play here, but to get the degree ultimately, you know, to have a Stanford degree for the rest of your life. And so his message to the fifth year guys was, you know, we committed to each other for 4 years. And so, you know, if we both mutually agree that, you know, we want you back here for a fifth year, then we'll make that happen. But, you know, if on their side, you know, they don't feel they want you to return, or on your side, you don't want to return, then he's going to look to help you find the best situation to set you up. And, you know, so although, you know, it's not, you know, a coach that you can go around and have one of those, like, super player coach relationships, he's, you know, he's always got the player's best interest at heart. So, you know, he's just, that's why he is so respected, is because he does care about his guys. And he's, you know, he's had all this opportunity to go coach at the next level. But the players are comfortable because we know, like, this is where he wants to be. This is where he wants to coach. This is where he wants his family to be. And so there's a sense of consistency within the program. And you know what to expect early on. And there's no, you know, corners that are being cut. So but that's, I guess, to the best of my ability, how I could answer that question.
Yeah. USF opens up with Texas next year in Austin. So I've got a really good buddy that lives out that way. I think, we need to take I have a 1 year old, and at that point next year, I'll have a 3 month old. The younger twins will be nearly a year old. The older kids will be six. Like, I think we just need to load all six kids and everybody up in, like, an Astro van and go out to Austin. Are you excited to go play in that one? I know you've been to different stadiums and stuff, but that's pretty cool to get to go to Texas, huh?
Oh, I'm pumped. You know, that's there. I believe their stadium holds 112,000, and, you know, they sell out pretty much every game, you know, and so I know the atmosphere is just going to be something that, you know, growing up as a, you know, a football player, you know, you want that college atmosphere. You want, you know, the big bright lights shining down, thousands and thousands and thousands of fans screaming, whether for or against you. And, you know, that's not really the environment at Stanford for our home games. I believe our stadium holds like 55,000. And, you know, we joke and call it the library, because we never, you know, sell out. The only time the stadium, you know, is even close to full is if the other team brings that many fans. And so, you know, we joke and say it's our advantage. We got to bring our own juice. So it's going to be definitely different than, you know, my experience being here and being at games. You know, obviously, like, going to Oregon and, you know, these other big schools in the Pac-12, you know, you get that environment. But, you know, Texas is the best of the best as far as, you know, environment. So that's something I'm really looking forward to, especially because I'll actually have an opportunity to be playing in that environment. You know, God willing that I'm, you know, healthy and, you know, and have that opportunity. So it's definitely something that I'm looking forward to.
Okay, so I have two questions for you, Bo. First of all, so you played at USF this fall. I came and watched you with the kids and you know, USF likes to brag that they have an incredible atmosphere. UCF has an incredible atmosphere in their stadium. How does it compare to who you played in the Pac-12?
You know, honestly, even though their stadium doesn't hold as many, you know, they brought a great energy to that stadium. They call it, I believe, the Bounce House. And it's pretty cool as a player, because when you're getting ready to come out of the tunnel, like you can feel the stands shaking, and you know, you can, it's pretty loud in there. And so, you know, comparing it to some of the bigger schools that, you know, I was at the games, you know, it doesn't hold as many, but it was still, honestly a great environment. I think, you know, if they had the numbers as far as seating and were able to fill out like they do with the smaller stadium, then it would mirror some of the bigger programs in the Pac-12 that, you know, I was able to attend and be at. And so, you know, for what they're capable of doing, I think, you know, they do a good job of providing a good atmosphere.
I asked just because I teased, because UCF fans cannot stand me.
Hoping,
and
she was hoping you would say it sucked. Like, she was ready for you to just crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I totally was. Yeah. And they are not my favorite people. So who knows? We might edit this little part out. Just kidding. But so totally unrelated question. So you're basically in this little limbo right now. You graduate in the spring, and then you'll come home after that to USF. And so what do you do during this window of time? Because you won't be participating in spring ball with Stanford, correct?
Yeah. And a lot of the guys that are in the portal right now, we're laughing. It's like, well, we have a life for the next 5 months. It's nice. We get to, you know, we get to be a regular, you know, regular college student for a little bit. You know, I'm in a little bit different of a situation because I'm, you know, going through physical therapy. I had shoulder surgery towards the end of October. And so for me, I'm going to be, you know, training and rehabbing and trying to get physically ready regardless. But there's definitely, you know, less angst, less anxiety, you know, for the next 5 months, not having to wake up super early or report to breakfast, or, you know, you get a lot more freedom. So, you know, the limbo aspect of it is definitely welcomed.
So those, I mean, all of those parts are positives. The other side of that coin is, how do you stay ready then to go into your next program? And I know for you, it's slightly different because you're staying ready mainly is rehabbing your shoulder and getting it back to where it needs to be. But how would a guy that needs to be, you know, at the very top of his game, stay that way over the course of this, you know, 5 month window?
Yeah, so I think that really boils down to consistency and accountability. And, you know, obviously you should be able to do it on your own, regardless. But a positive in my situation is all of us guys that are in the portal are doing our work together and pushing each other, because, you know, we're excited for, you know, all of our futures, you know, from the relationships we've built as teammates and friends here. You know, we all have each other's best interests in mind. So that's definitely going to help. But, you know, if it was a situation where, you know, a guy was kind of on his own, then he would just have to take it upon himself, you know, to really think about what he wants out of, you know, taking this opportunity to transfer. Because, you know, most guys that are transferring are looking to, you know, put themselves in a position to play, especially if they're, you know, trying to get to the next level. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you can be as good as you want to be, but it'll show up next season, you know, if you don't take advantage of these next 5 months.
So
getting yourself ready.
What weight room do you use? Are you have to use the normal student gym at Stanford, or everybody's piling into lifestyles? Like, how does, or does Stanford let you still use the facilities?
Yeah, so they sent an email out to all the transfer guys and, you know, kind of with what they expected from us and what we were allowed to do. And they said, you know, academic help, you know, as far as our advisors and all that, the ARC, which is just like a resource center for doing schoolwork and stuff like that, all that's still available to us. We're allowed to work out in the same weight room that the team works out in, but they chose a certain window of time where it wouldn't conflict with any of the team workouts, you know, which makes sense because they, you know, they're focusing and getting ready for their season. And so they don't want any distractions with, you know, former guys or guys that are leaving for whatever reason, being in there at the same time. And, you know, they made it very clear cut. Like, if you violate these rules and you come in like during hours you're not allowed to, then you'll lose that privilege and you'll have to work out at one of the regular student gyms. So as far as working out, you know, that's kind of the deal. You know, we still, like, I still have access to the team PT guy. That's who I'm working with for my shoulder, and we can go see the trainers as long as that's not conflicting with, you know, their times with the players on the team. And so they're still taking care of us in that sense. I think the only part that a couple of us are unhappy about is they told us we weren't allowed to eat at the athlete dining center anymore. And so we're having to account for breakfast. Everyone has to account for lunch on their own, but now in addition, we got to account for breakfast on our own, which is definitely probably the most difficult part. As far as the privileges that they've laid out for us. But yeah, you know, for the most part, they're not trying to punish us. They know we're making a decision for our lives, and you know, they're on board with it, but it's a business. And so the sanctions that they kind of set make sense. And, you know, we kind of expected that, you know, when we made the decision to enter the portal, that there were going to be changes. And so, yes, it is what it is.
I've got one kind of switching lanes a little bit. We may wrap up after this. I appreciate your time, but, did you grow up, this is a leading question, but did you grow up a college football fan? Like, are you a Gator like kind of the rest of the family? And, you know, if so, like, are you still, like, do you still kind of follow the whatever team you grew up, you know, watching as a kid? Like, do you still kind of cheer for them because you don't really go head-to-head with them or anything? And then also, too, kind of the other part of that is, like, are you still just a college fan in general? Like, do you watch the big games when you're not playing? Do you, like, do you watch the playoff and all the bowl games and the national championship and all that? Or, like, are you so inundated with college football that you kind of just want to break from it? Or how does that, like, whole, being a fan work now that you're, like, on the same level as all these guys? I guess is the easier way to ask all of that.
Definitely. And so, obviously the program that you're playing for, that's really the only program success that you're really concerned with. But you know, growing up, it was funny because everyone on the Peak side is definitely a Florida fan. And my mom actually went to Florida State. So she tried to convert me early on. It was a house divided. But the Peaks ended up winning me over, and you know, I'm still a Florida fan to this day. I don't keep, you know, close watch on what's going on. I'll follow their season, and you know, obviously I want them to be successful, not just selfishly as a fan, but you know, just as a college football fan, you know, and even Florida State, I want them to get back to their prestige, so that way when Florida beats them, it's that much better. But yeah, I mean, as far as watching like the playoffs and, you know, the big games, bowl games and all that stuff, it's fun being a, you know, a member of, you know, college football and watching these other guys, you know, do what they're doing, whether, you know, it's a team that you played during the regular season, or, you know, you have guys that, you know, whether it's the recruiting process or, you know, you played against them in high school or, you know, played with them. There's a lot of guys like that from Florida. You know, that you just, you know, for the love of the game, you just, we joke, we just want it to be good games. We don't want blowouts, you know? And so we love, you know, following, well, I'll speak for myself. I love following, you know, all the big games and just, you know, being a college football fan, especially since our season was over early this year. You know, you get to focus on other people. You're not focusing on training for a bowl game or anything like that. And so you're able to, you know, focus a little bit more on being a fan as far as following. So yeah, I would say that, you know, I'll never get sick of college football. I wish college football was all year long. But as an athlete, our bodies could not take that. So that's not a realistic possibility.
For sure. Well, I think I'm good. Allie, do you have anything else, man? I appreciate your time.
This is great, Bo. Appreciate it. And it was definitely so interesting to hear about the portal and how it works. And I feel like we learned some things tonight. So thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely. See you guys.
That was really cool. Something totally different. First guest we've had on. I feel like we have access to really anybody in the big three Rolodex. I know that your contact list is probably pretty good, or who, you know, you and Eric may have contacts with, but I like that for the first interview. I thought that was more informative and insightful than, you know, most things that we could get. And I think it's kind of rare, like you said, to catch somebody just right in the right timing. You know, like we were just talking about Felipe Franks, who we're recording this on Monday night. You said he's going to practice tomorrow on Tuesday. Like, he announced and then was like there. So like, we wouldn't have been able to get him because we would have to go through like a sports information director. And so we kind of caught Bo at a good time. So appreciate his time. I thought that was super cool. And thanks for you setting that up. And I hope everybody enjoys that. If not, I'll enjoy it when I listen back tomorrow, but hope everybody else does too.
Yeah, no, I thought that was really interesting. I find it fascinating that you can enter the portal and pull yourself out at any point in time. And obviously it depends on what your coaching staff allows you to do. And I'm sure it boils down to your reason for entering the portal. I don't think you could say like, I didn't get enough playing time, so I'm going to stick my name in there, see if anybody will give me more. If not, I'll be back next week.
I seem to remember like a few, I want to say like when Tagger was here, I think we had, like, there were reports of Blackman going in the portal and then, you know, pulling his name out. And, like, there are reports of other guys going in the portal. And, like, I can't remember who it was, but, like, Newberg got into it with some, but not got into it with a kid, but the kid basically refuted the report.
The claim.
Said, like, no, I never did. And, you know, he did. Like, you know, and that wasn't Blackman that said, like, no, I didn't do it. But, so I knew, like, there are situations where a kid will go into the portal and change his mind. But yeah, like Bo said, like, it's definitely a case by case. Like, with Willie, where there was no accountability or no kind of rules or standards or anything for the program, I'm sure you could have done it 20 times. And, you know, he was just looking for any player.
It depends on how desperate you are to keep
to keep your job. And so, you know, you're going to let people do whatever you want because, you know, the inmates are running the asylum at this point. I can use all the cliches, but, you know, so, but yeah, like if you're a team that is competent or, you know, a coach that requires accountability, you know, I could see a player from Florida going to the portal, weighing out his options and then, you know, potentially coming back, but like it wouldn't happen twice. Like, I know it wouldn't be like a two time, like once you go in that second time, I would think at most programs, the coaches just say like, all right, we're pulling your Scott, like you better find a place cause you're not going to quit on us twice or whatever. So, again, it probably has a lot to do with reasoning. It probably has a lot to do with, you know, player situation, you know, are they trying to get back home because of a sick relative, you know,
or right. Just, yeah.
You know, I mean, so I would think
some reasons are more valid than others.
Absolutely. Are they afraid of getting beat out by Justin Fields or like, what's the situation here?
Right. Didn't you find it interesting, the academic standards for Stanford? I knew that they were higher and I knew that there are plenty of schools that have different academic standards than just like the baseline NCAA ones, but the having to take two AP classes your junior and senior year is interesting. And it really, like, I kind of asked him about it, but I also wasn't trying to insult him either. But like, how the hell do they compete with some of these teams who have guys that read on like an eighth grade level?
Well, I think that's what makes, I mean, that's what makes it so tough at places like there and Notre Dame and Northwestern and just different
Duke
schools.
Duke and Vandy and stuff.
Yeah, which makes it even, you know, more impressive when, you know, a team like that does have a good year. Like you think about that year that Duke, 2013, they went to the ACC championship game.
ACC championship, sure. Yeah,
they got blown out by us, but then they played Texas A&M really, really good, and that was the Johnny Manziel Texas A&M game. Like they were actually winning in that bowl game,
right?
Pretty high, and then Manziel leads that crazy comeback. So, and then there, you know, there have been years that Vandy's, you know, beat UF and beat teams they shouldn't. I mean, those are, you know, pretty down years by UF, but it makes it even more impressive when those schools do go kind of all those runs or play really well. Yeah. Like Stanford won 9 games back-to-back years. They were really good in 13. Did they win the Rose Bowl that year? I think they went to it. So anyway, yeah, it makes it even more impressive when they have those runs because of
how hard it was just to get there.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I thought that was a really good interview. I thought that was a lot of fun, and I'm glad that he kind of took some time to do that.
Yeah, I definitely think I think people will find that informative, and I mean, I feel like I learned a lot. And first of all, he's my cousin. I've been talking about this process with him for a month, and I still learn things. But I don't know. Just as a college football fan in general, I don't know. It was very interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I thought it was awesome. I'd love to, you know, we'll get him on in, you know, a year or two when he wraps up and kind of do a follow up and see, you know, how things have been since then and, you know, what were you expecting going into USF? Yeah, well, definitely greener since these. All right, that's a terrible joke. For the
maybe
USF
not greener.
yeah, like how did it all turn out? What, you know, what would you have done differently? You know, obviously winning and losing makes you feel better or worse. So hopefully USF is able to turn around. You know, I want them to
I'm
be good
because
they're the
see
local
what
team.
Scott does because I think that was on paper, that is a great hire. So it'll be interesting to see. And I feel like the AAC is kind of in a, like, it's not like starting to be good in the SEC and how long it would take to, you know, get to a championship level there. I feel like the AAC is kind of anybody's conference any given year. So you would think it could be pretty easy if he really does turn it out around at USF to be good quickly.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with that. Like, I think it's easier to get to the top there. You know, Memphis has got some turnover losing their coach. Houston is an absolute cluster. You know, I think UCF is still kind of the team to beat probably next
year.
Sure,
for sure.
Cincinnati with Luke Fickle there. This is probably his last year. Like, he'll probably get another job somewhere.
A bigger program.
But yeah, like, Fickle leaves, UCF, you know, doesn't.
Well, and I'm not saying
they're
going to win the conference next year.
Yeah, they could get there within a couple of years. Some stability from Scott. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
I just think when you couple the recruiting, you know, hotbed that Tampa is, honestly, USF could just recruit the Bay Area and have the best athletes in the AAC, no, like, hands down. If they landed all the guys that they would want just from the Bay Area here. But it's, I don't know. Like, we're not looking at Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss and saying, like, oh man, in 3 years, I bet he's winning the SEC. But that really could be USF's reality. I'm not saying it's happening next year. And I'm not saying it's happening at all. But I feel like the situation is right for the right coach to come in and have success very quickly.
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree. Speaking of that, I don't think we really talked about this, but how great will the Egg Bowl be this year? Like, it's always on Black Friday.
Oh, my God. Kind of want to get a media pass for SEC Media Days this year, even though I basically do this podcast and raise children now as opposed to cover college football like I used to. But because can you imagine what quotes are going to come out of SEC Media Days this year?
I mean,
the
coaches are just so Saban's always amazing, you know, and always mad. So he's great. Orgeron's great.
I think,
you
know, Mullen's funny as hell.
Jimbo Mullen.
Now
you know, Muschamp, Malzahn, Leach.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
It's just
Leach and Kiffin
and
are
Lane
such
Kiffin, yeah.
Such SEC additions to the SEC.
Oh,
I mean,
people have tweeted this, so, like, I didn't, you know, come up with this or anything, but could you imagine, like, SEC coaches, like, what's it called? Like, Big Brother, or just where they all live in the same house. Like, I don't know what you call this and stuff, but I think it would be really fun. Like, I think we need to set that up where they all live together for like a week and
See what, oh my God, it would be hilarious. Well, I saw somebody, a sports writer, make a list of coaches in the SEC and rank them in order of who he'd want to go to Vegas with. And I'm pretty sure he had Mullen at either 4 or 5. Mullen retweeted it and wrote something like, I think I should be much higher up on this list, which just got me thinking, like, out of all of the coaches, could you imagine going to Vegas with some of these SEC coaches? I feel like it would be hilarious.
So my top two would, I mean, okay, is this recency bias? I think my top two would be Leach and Kiffin.
I probably think they would be up there for me too.
Like, Leach would be the funniest. Like, could you imagine a guy like that, like, in Las Vegas? Like, oh my gosh. And then Kiffin would be like, I mean, we would just get into a lot of trouble. Like, you know, Leach would be funny and Kiffin would be like, oh, I hope I don't gamble my house away or whatever, you know.
You need Derek Mason and Will Muschamp because they would beat the hell out of anybody that looks at you the wrong way. They would be the ones that instigate fights 1,000%.
Saban, like, would Lane be Kiffin, so serious.
Like, I think that he would be hilarious, fun. Though. Like, can you picture Saban on a blackjack table? Like, I'm totally down for that.
I think Saban's probably got the best
poker face.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's got the best poker face in the SEC? Like, I feel like
he's intimidating as hell. People are folding left and right just because they're like, I don't know what that guy has, but he is serious. He
scares my soul.
I feel like Mullen would just egg on anybody with anything that they're considering doing. Like, I feel like he would be fun. I feel like Fisher would be hysterical. Like, this is the most fun conference coaching wise for sure right now, but really that I can think of. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's hilarious. And I think Leach and Lane Kiffin are going to be a more wild version of, like, Spurrier and Bowden. Spurrier and Bowden were always so fun to listen to and to watch, and they never missed a moment at, like, an opportunity to poke fun at each other. This is going to be like that on steroids, because at least Spurrier and Bowden had, like, I don't know, a little bit of, like, I don't know if filter is the right class, word, but, like, couth. I don't know.
That's it.
Something that's missing with Leach and Kiffin, but it is going to be so fun. And I don't know if you saw this on the internet, but so I guess the foreword of Mike Leach's book says something about the name of the chapter is, like, why you should always pee on your dog.
Oh my gosh. No.
And it's hilarious. It's something similar to that. We'll have to look up what the exact wording is, but how hilarious that the Egg Bowl was basically decided by a player pretending to pee like a dog.
Oh yeah. Very good.
I don't know. I think that's hilarious.
I'm
pumped for this.
Yeah. I can't wait for that game. Like, obviously I don't want that game to get here quickly, and it will be a long time. Like, I don't have to worry about it coming.
I'm pumped for every time there's a microphone in front of either one of them for the next 9 months.
It's going to be fantastic. So, I hope that, like, I don't know. Like, they need to, you know, they mic up the players. Like, they need to mic up those two coaches and give us, like, coach cams. You know, like, the national championships, they show the game on, like, 8 channels. And they give you, like, you know, the Spanish commentary, the French commentary that lives in Baton Rouge. Like, just everything. Like, I want that. I want the 8 different channels for that game. Friday night, nothing else. Although, for you, that's the night that UCF always plays USF. So, but I'm not going to that game. I'm staying home and watching watching Leach versus Kiffin, because that'll be fantastic. So
you remember the show on MTV called Two-A-Days?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I want Two-A-Days on the SEC network, and I want them to spend I want a camera crew at every camp, and then I want to edit it together. I think it would be gold. And there for sure would be an uneven amount of time at Ole Miss and Mississippi State, like, for sure, just because of the amount of footage that I am sure they would get from those two guys. But SEC Network, if you're listening, let's make this happen. I need to see what is going on in the locker room with Lane Kiffin and Leach.
All the time. Do you think
– all the time.
How – I mean, the answer is none. Like, I'll just answer it. But I was just going to ask, does Leach change at all Does he tone anything back? Does he?
Did you watch the video of him ringing the cowbells getting off of the private jet? Okay, so this is my question to you. You're having to explain this video to somebody who lives in another country. Like, how do you explain what the hell is going on there?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no clue. How do you just explain Mike Leach to somebody that doesn't live in this country? You know,
I don't know. Have you ever watched the video of him explaining why he doesn't wear cargo shorts?
No.
Or actually, oh my God, it's hysterical. We're not going to talk about it on air because it's that not appropriate. But it is hilarious. And looking at, he talks about how like it's so uncomfortable and how do you adjust your junk? And it's so funny. Jeez. And all of the reporters around him, their faces are like totally red. They're all trying not to laugh. And he's dead serious as he describes his hatred for cargo shorts.
I mean, he just has some of the best quotes. I love when he talks about the players not focusing. And he's like, because they're worried about their fat little girlfriends. And oh my gosh, it's just, you know, I mean, the reaction videos that people, you know, use with him where he's like, that was last effing week. And F you and F me and F everybody, you know, like he's freaking hilarious. So yeah, I'm glad that he's closer to here.
It's not that he loves that he hates cargo shorts. It's that he loves them. It's that he hates gym shorts.
Oh, because they're less comfortable. There's more support. I understand.
Right.
In the cargo shorts. It's all coming together for me. So, all right. On that note, before we get in any more trouble, we'll wrap it up. But again, appreciate Bo coming on and excited to get him back to Tampa and kind of see that and see how he progresses here. But we'll do it again next week. I don't know what the show will be about, but we'll figure something. Oh, Super Bowl week.
Super Bowl. We'll do something. We do know what we'll be about.
I guess. We'll do the Super Bowl, the knockoff national championship. So I'm a bigger Natty guy than Super Bowl, but I still have a good time. So cool. We'll do it again next week.